Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
And we're pleased to welcome back as our guest the president of the Providence chapter of the NAACP, Jim Vincent. Thank you for joining us, Jim.
Good morning. Thank you, Ann.
State Senate President Teresa Piva-Weed is leaving after 8 years in that role. She's taking on a new job as head of the Hospital Association of Rhode Island. Piva-Weed has been Governor Raimondo's biggest legislative cheerleader, so some people see her exit as a setback for the governor. Jim Vincent, what do you make of that viewpoint?
I'm not so sure if that's the case. I think that there's plenty of examples of Dominic Ruggiero supporting efforts that she's made in the past, and I expect her to continue to get his support.
Scott, I think this can be argued from both points of view. Ruggiero is big with the Laborers Union, and they've been big political allies of Governor Raimondo. So how do you see it?
I don't think we're going to know for a little while. What I'm going to do is, and I'm sure you will be too, we all will, watch how some of Governor Raimondo's key priorities, the Rhode Island promise, the 2 years of free college. I'm going to watch on some of those issues and just see how they react. I think that's when the rubber kind of hits the road and we're going to know what the Senate's going to do.
And Maureen, Piva-Weed is leaving after about 8 years as Senate president. She's been in the legislature for almost a quarter century. How would you evaluate her legacy?
I think she's done a good job. I think she's held things together. It's interesting. One suspects that Dominic Ruggiero was the one that really managed things and kept her afloat, especially in the beginning. But I think she was key on pension reform. She stepped in, when we were doing the repairs. And so I think she's been an ally, and I think her policy positions have been credible. And I do agree with Scott. I think they're basically on the same page. But some of these other policy issues, like the Promise Scholarship and things like that, he may not be wanting to go down that road.
Well, let's move on and talk about an issue that I know is very important to our guest, Jim Vincent. Providence police are moving ahead with plans to equip officers with body cams. This is something that's been strongly supported by the Providence NAACP. So, Jim, how much of a difference do you think this will make in addressing some of the persistent concerns we've heard about police community relations?
I think it'll make a big difference because I think one of the key things in terms of police community relations is trust. And with all the different allegations back and forth in terms of who did what to who, I think body cameras can help explain exactly what may have happened. It's not foolproof, but I think that it'll go a long way to just restore trust in terms of the community. Now, there's some little things that have to be worked out in terms of about the discretion that the officer has in terms of turning the camera on and off. And then, there's some privacy issues as well. But I think in the balance, it's a good thing, and I'm glad to see it.
We know Providence police have made progress in introducing more diversity into the new officers who are coming into the department. What else needs to be done at this time to further improve police community relations?
Well, you just mentioned the diversity. They've done a phenomenal job. In the last class, 63% of the classes are people of color. And when you include white women, it's 71%. So I don't want to look past that. That's a phenomenal job. It's going to go a long way in terms of helping restore confidence in terms of the police department. I think body cameras are something that is good. But I also think you need to look at the Policeman's Bill of Rights still, because too often there are issues where police officers are let go, where people think that that shouldn't have happened. So I think that we need to continue to look at that issue.
I think there are some police administrators who would agree with Jim that the Bill of Rights needs a look, but that never seems to go anywhere at the State House. Why not, Scott?
Because the unions are very strong up there. I think that's the big reason. Again, a lot of people in management of the police departments do not like that law, but it's tough to beat a police union.
And what would you say about that, Maureen?
I would agree with that. I think that's one of the sticking points. The other thing is, I think it's really important when you talk about body cameras, about the tweaking that you're talking about, because there is distrust within the minority communities. Some people are saying, oh, this is a scam. It's not going to work. And we've got to get beyond that and beyond that cynicism so there's some coming together. And I think that's really important.
Meanwhile, Governor Raimondo is putting her support behind a trio of good government measures. She's backing the line item veto, spot audits of elected officials' campaign accounts, and blocking campaigns campaigns by candidates who owe large unpaid campaign finance funds. This would seem like a win-win for Governor Raimondo, because even if the legislature doesn't pass these measures, she can say that she was advocating for them when she is running for re-election next year. What do you think, Maureen?
Sure, I think so. But on the other hand, she's spending political capital now. So some of the, for example, some of the bills that she wants, for example, the tuition and so forth, I think she's stepping out there and she's not making too many friends, particularly on the light item veto. I don't think that's going to go. I have to say the other two, I think, are brilliant. Scott's been talking about auditing of campaign finance reports. And the whole idea of not letting you run if you've got a lot of debt, I think, to me, sounds like a great idea.
What do you make of these proposals, Scott?
Pretty much agree with Maureen, believe it or not. Every once in a while we have to do that. I don't see the line item veto going, and I don't think it's the big deal that a lot of these people think. Charlie Baker has it in Massachusetts. The governor there, he never uses it. Jorge Elorza, the mayor of Providence, has a line item veto, never uses it. The other two are really good ideas, and I think a lot of the good government groups, like John Marion from Common Cause, who's been here, has advocated that. So I hope the legislature will pass that. On the other hand, it goes directly, you know, at some of their long-term practices, so look out.
Jim Vincent, a line item veto might not spark that much excitement for everyday people. What's your take on these?
It might not spark excitement, but 44 other states have it, and I think it would make the process better, you know, because you could still have people override the veto. So I just think that, you know, even though it might not be the biggest thing in the toolbox for any governor, I think you know, that she should have what 44 other states have. As far as the other two, I'm not sure if they are constitutional. So we'd have to check that first before we move down those roads.
Jim, your organization, the Providence NAACP, is supporting the governor's proposal for 2 years of free tuition for Rhode Islanders at CCRI, URI, and RIC. Is your organization doing anything to try and mobilize support to try to convince lawmakers to support this proposal?
Absolutely. I've written op-eds and sent letters to people, as well as talked about it on a variety of TV shows. I think it's important. 70% of the jobs that are going to come in are going to require some form of college. And Rhode Islanders, I think it's less than 50%. And within my community, the communities of color is even lower than that. So we have to level the playing field. The hardest thing about college, as the governor would say, shouldn't be paying for it. So we understand that. It disproportionately affects our community. So anything that's going to boost the participation of our people, some of them being some of the most talented and intelligent folks in the state, is a good thing.
Tell us a little bit more about what the Providence NAACP is focused on these days.
Well, you know, one thing I would say about Senate President Teresa Piva-Weed is that she was a champion for the justice reinvestment bills. There are six bills that the governor is in favor of that passed the Senate unanimously. So I have to give her a lot of credit for doing that.
And
that
those bills died last year in the House. Do you have any reason to think they will be more successful in clearing the House this year?
Well, I spoke to the Speaker, and he said he's going to bring the bills up, so at least for a hearing earlier, and he has done that. But I would hope that there'd be a vote, you know, soon. It shouldn't be in the last hour. There's no reason not to have justice reinvestment in Rhode Island. Our probation and parole system is a mess, and we need to get into the idea of helping people and not worry about how it may or may not look.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And from the Providence chapter of the NAACP, Jim Vincent.
Thank you, Ian.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please follow our website at ripr.org.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward. Details at rhodeislandfoundation.org.